to Sweet Tea and Strategy, a podcast by Ackerman Marketing and PR featuring business and community leaders throughout Tennessee, talking about issues and trends of importance to our state and beyond, and sharing some of their very best sweet tea recipes and tea sipping stories. I'm Kathy Ackerman, and I'm pleased to welcome Kim Reuter, President and CEO of UCOR in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, Project Manager Cleanup for the East Tennessee Technology Park, which we'll define a little bit more in just a minute, Ken. But thanks very much for joining us today.
Well, Kathy, thank you. I'm really glad to be here today.
Thanks. Before we get started into more serious business, let's talk about sweet tea. My guess is that you may not have grown up in the South, may not have spent all that much of your childhood in the South, but how do you feel about sweet tea?
Well, I have an interesting story with it, and you're right on. I'm a Yankee. I grew up in the outskirts of Cleveland, Ohio.
Graduated
from Cleveland State on this journey. But as life has it, it had brought me to the southeastern United States to work, and in that met the love of my life, and Ruth.
Perfect.
And so was married in the Southeast. She actually had a northern background, but spent many of her years in the Southeast and was pretty well rooted in there. So very, very traditional southern lady, and had friends that she built over the time with regard to that. And one of them, I became closely friends with her husband, and so we had a kind of a nice couple's relationship. And as part of that, one of her big things was in the summer is her sweet tea that she made. And I guess I looked at it from a very different perspective, because ultimately in my journey, I got a degree in engineering, and it actually was chemical engineering. And so maybe I had an eye for more of the science of things. And so I would watch her make this sweet tea, which if you hadn't grown up with it, it was a little bit sweet to you.
A lot of sugar.
Yeah. And I witnessed her one day making it. Her name was JoJo, and I witnessed her making it. And what I watched her do was what an engineer would refer to as super saturating the water with sugar.
Yes.
So she
yes.
had a technique for getting the maximum amount of sugar dissolved in water that you could physically do with heating and things like that.
Oh, that's
right. And she had learned that from traditionally through her mother. And she was from the Florida area, and then she would sun brew the tea into the super sugar saturated water.
Oh, the perfect
yes,
sweet tea.
Yes.
Yes.
And then of course, you know, had the whole aspect of how you iced it and all that. And it took me a while, because again, I knew too much. Again, many times camping and hanging out and doing a little boating, it becomes a favorite. So
have you replicated that recipe yourself?
No, I have not. I don't think I'm worthy of doing it. I've watched Ruth do it a few times, and interesting enough, our kids all grew up together, and so all my children are grown up and off on their own, but they still talk about JoJo's tea.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I'll have to try it sometime.
Yes.
Get Ruth to
yeah.
make it for me.
We will. We'll have to get together.
Sounds good. Moving on to talk about the important work that you and your company have been managing for the past several years in Oak Ridge. Give us just a little bit of background on UCOR and on the massive task that you were faced with in cleaning up the huge gaseous diffusion plant. In other words, what is UCOR's mission, and what kind of scale are we talking about here with this project?
Yeah, I've got quite a bit of passion for this. I've spent probably the last 32 years in environmental cleanup of federal sites, and this is the largest undertaking that I've ever been involved with, and actually it's one of the largest, and it's referred to as Superfund. It's the Superfund Federal Act for cleanups in the United States, and the undertaking essentially is delivering three end states or outcomes associated to doing the environmental cleanup of what's referred to as the East Tennessee Technology Park, or for those that have been, you know, in this region of the country for their whole lives and many generations, referred to as K-25.
Yes.
And what that undertaking is that we ultimately have the responsibility to perform the necessary environmental cleanup actions to clean up the site to a point that it's no longer considered a Superfund location, which then enables significant land use opportunities, which is referred to as reindustrialization, for economic development of in East Tennessee and the greater state of Tennessee for larger scale businesses, commonly referred to as brownfield redevelopment. And that's really at the center of our mission. But really what bookends that mission, because it fits appropriately with land use and land reuse, is conservation, because not all land that's cleaned up is appropriate or valuable from an economic development standpoint. It more leans itself towards conservation and civic and community reuse from that standpoint. And then, by the nature of it being a federal site, it has a significant historic preservation component to it. In the case of this site, which I find personally very exciting, is that it will be the part of the 409th National Park of our country.
Very exciting.
Yes, no doubt. And yes. It's really added a lot of energy to our positive energy to our job. And so we have these three end states that we have to deliver: historic preservation, environmental cleanup and economic redevelopment, and conservation reuse and availability. The magnitude of it is significant. The cleanup is involved remediating the largest under-roof buildings that have ever been built in the history of the world.
Wow.
So
yes.
In excess of 6 million square feet, you know, multiple malls of the America, if you're familiar with that.
Yes.
in the Minnesota, Minneapolis area. So it's a very significant initiative that's going to essentially result in 6 million square feet of building being cleaned up, roughly 1,500 acres of land remediated in return for brownfield redevelopment, approximately 3,300 to 3,400 acres of land under a conservation use agreement with the state of Tennessee to benefit all of the citizens of Tennessee, and then approximately 70 acres dedicated to historic preservation, which is a combination of the national park site and a state historic center associated to the features of the K-25 facility or gaseous diffusion plants.
Huge undertaking.
Yes.
Yes. And your client, if you will, is the U.S. Department of Energy.
Yes, it is. Yes.
What were the top three challenges that you were faced with initially on this project, would you say?
Okay, so we were awarded this job in around the May of 2011 timeframe. And the three most significant things we were facing was first of all, through the system the government has for measuring the performance of projects and in major federal contracts, this project at that point in time, around the summer 2011, was deemed a troubled project.
Right.
And it had a number of significant performance, delivery, regulatory, and safety issues associated to it. And so that was a very principal focus of ours. And it was embedded in our contract with regard to recovering that, triaging the patient, if you will, and then progressing its recovery. So
and
that was
the company was rewarded accordingly against those measures.
Yes, yeah.
Yes.
So it's a performance-based contract,
right.
And we have measures in there that if we meet those, then that's part of the fee that we're provided for performing the work by the federal government. So that was the first challenge, is we were coming into this. The need to for a kind of a formal business turnaround, if you've been part of turnaround initiatives with
yes.
regard to companies. The second is reestablishing confidence within the people who finance our work to do it. So that would be our Congress, who appropriates the dollars for us to do our work. And when you have troubled jobs, you usually see appropriations or fundings trail down as a result of it, because you know our Congress is responsible
yes.
for being fiduciary with our taxpayer dollars, and so there was a really large focus with regard to how do we make sure that we not only deliver but we do the necessary things to tell our story transparently and accurately, so that we could turn around the perceptions and realities with regard to the job within those who finance our work. And so that was a pretty big challenge. We actually branded ourselves as investment worthy in a commitment to demonstrate that and have carried that brand all the way through. Mm-hmm. The third was standing up a multi-billion dollar company.
Yes.
you know, in East Tennessee. And the mechanics of doing that and the need to do it with quite a sense of urgency. We're usually allotted approximately 90 days to do a transaction. That's a pretty rapid startup.
It's very aggressive.
Most of the focus and most of our work revolves around people, both those that are represented or part of a union and those that are not, and ensuring that we're doing the right thing with regard to being their employer and making that happen credibly.
And finding the right people, training the right people.
We typically, at that point in time, we were about 1,250 in workforce size, and we typically commit to bring somewhere between 70 and 100 people to the job from our parents, the people who own our joint venture, which we have two owners, and finding them and bringing them to fulfill these change agent roles, because we're back to issue one. We've got to institute change and turnaround. And so
is
those,
that hard to do, to find that workforce and ramp it up so quickly?
Well, actually, for this job, it was not that hard, because everybody wants to come and live in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, want to live in East Tennessee. So we have jobs at varying locations, and you could argue, you know, some are not garden spots because they have, you know, they're fairly isolated, or they have very challenging climate conditions or that. This job is the most popular job we have.
Is it?
Out of either of our parent owners.
Oh, interesting.
You know, we're 55% owned by AECOM Corporation, 45% owned by Jacobs Corporation.
Right.
And our parents sourced the job for us initially with these 100 folks. And where we typically are more having to go out and press and ask for people to join jobs.
They were asking you.
We actually had a winner's problem with regard to five or six deep in the interest factor it was
talent.
Fantastic. Yes.
Yeah.
I have been on what I've heard of as the tour of the rivers. I have worked at every environmental cleanup site that the Department of Energy has across the nation, a couple of them more than once. And this job was the easiest one to source that I ever experienced. And it is I've always prided myself on being affiliated or part of professional and high-performing teams. This one set a new watermark for me.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so it's very rewarding from that standpoint.
So what are you proudest of in terms of your involvement with this enormous job?
Well, I'll answer from the standpoint that, you know, so I think a lot of people would expect me to answer from how much environmental cleanup we've done.
Mm-hmm.
I see that as the price of admission. That's our obligation to do that. I mean, that's the definition of success or not. Not what is the most significant thing. What I see as the most significant thing and individually feel the best about is the synergy that we have been able to establish between being the largest and highest performing cleanup contractor and job within the Department of Energy portfolio, and how we've used that to enable economic development and employment prosperity.
I'm really interested in you talking about that a little bit.
So I we have been focused on that from the beginning. This is investment worthy. This is the commitment that we, and in many cases I, to individualize it, made to the workforce, which is we were going to run this organization from what we refer to as a shared governance model or approach. Everyone sat at the table because of the significant role that each party plays in being able to get to that, to being the highest performing team possible.
It's a lot of consensus building.
It is. It is a lot of active listening, a lot of voices, and then the responsibility of myself and the executive team that makes up the Office of the President is then integrating and building the gestalt from all that input. And I feel we've done that. And the outcome foundationally is obviously the environmental cleanup and all that's been done. But the amount of economic development that it's brought has been approximately $250 million a year
now
into East Tennessee.
Yeah. Give us some examples.
So our financing level for the job was roughly right at about the $400 million a year level when we first came here. Certainly short of where we needed to be. That was related to Challenge 2. We are now being financed at about $650 million a year. All of those dollars ultimately end up in wages that get returned back into East Tennessee, because that's right. But we do $120 million a year in subcontracted work. We do $100 million a year in small business work. And so all those dollars are being returned back into the community and growing these businesses, turning small businesses into moderate-sized businesses. And that's just the direct dollar measurement. We've worked with the Haslam School of Business with regard to, you know, a more economic analysis of it and what the multipliers are.
Right.
The number is obviously much higher than $250 million a year. And, you know, I mean, to me, $250 million is a lot of money.
It is.
And then when it comes to employment prosperity, we've gone from 1,250 to 1,900. So roughly 700 people more are working in East Tennessee. And actually a lion's share of the new folks that have come to work for us come from the northern counties, which are the distressed counties. You know that, and so we've worked in partnership with the Appalachian Regional Commission to facilitate and employment development and prosperity opportunity back in. And what we've done is what I'm most proud of is we have turned environmental cleanup into a multi-billion dollar industry in Oak Ridge, Tennessee.
That's amazing.
That has a very bright future associated to it, because there is a significant amount of cleanup to go in the other portions of the reservation to meet our federal and moral obligation to complete the Superfund cleanup of the entire reservation, not just the East Tennessee Technology Park.
So are you finished or almost finished with the East Tennessee Technology Park portion of this?
Yes, we're very close. So we have a pretty comprehensive strategic plan or playbook, as you would hope every team has. And it had three visions in it. The first vision was related to finishing the gaseous diffusion plants themselves. It was referred to as Vision 2016. That's done, finished accordingly. The next is what's called Delivering Vision 2020. That's the completion of the East Tennessee Technology Park. We are contractually obligated to finish that by around the late July of 2020 timeframe.
We are on track
for end of April, end of May, somewhere in that window. In addition to that, we've been able to accelerate the actual completion by over 4 years. Originally, our contract had us only going through a certain number of the buildings, not completing the site in totality.
Right.
Through our performance, and again, back to item one, recovering the job, triaging the patient, and then moving on to their recovery, we've been rewarded, if you will, with being given the opportunity to complete the entire site. And we're doing that 4 years early, and the outcome of that is approximately a $600 million savings to the federal taxpayer in reducing environmental liability. I won't go into a lot of the details because how the work is financed is a show in itself.
Complicated,
I'm sure. But a majority of the ETTP site cleanup is actually coming through a federal trust fund. And those trust fund dollars are very precious, mm-hmm. because the trust has been fully funded. So as a result, every dollar we save out of that trust fund goes to enabling more cleanup at the other gaseous diffusion sites at Portsmouth, Ohio, and Paducah, Kentucky.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it really has a multiplying beneficial effect.
Yes.
More than just saving Treasury $600 million, it's going to enable additional cleanup or even cleanup sooner up at the other two gaseous diffusion sites.
So a project like this has to have safety at its very core in terms of the work that you're doing. Talk about the safety record a little bit on this project.
Yeah. Well, I'll start with the hazards that we're managing.
Right.
This is some of the most hazardous work that our workers can face probably in any industry. Mm-hmm. We have significant industrial safety hazards because of the physical status of the buildings. You know, they're been accessed, they're deteriorated, things of that nature. So life safety is a predominant focus at all times. That's referred to as industrial safety. We obviously have the nuclear component of it. So radiological risk is significant and comes in many forms, and we see all those forms. And then there is the whole chemical toxicological aspect of it, whether it's asbestos or mercury or lead or cadmium or beryllium, or you can go on and on. And so the integrated hazard suite that we face is significant. So we have to have a very different approach to basic safety and health.
Yes.
And so we implement what we call a culture of excellence, in which we culturally, more than just program and process, but culturally develop our organization with an understanding and appreciation that every task, every activity, every time could be done safely. So if you're in a 5,000 step procedure or work package, if you apply that mindset to every activity, every step, every task, every time, you will be at a zero injury state regardless of what the hazard is. And what's great about the culture of excellence from my point of view is it is associated that to performance. So high performing safety is high performance, high performing productivity. They're not mutually exclusive. So you don't get caught in that trap of the best safety is when you do nothing. You know, and you can, people can get trapped in that paradigm, and it can get very difficult to extract yourself from it.
Right.
And so you see productivity at the expense of safety, or worse yet, you see safety at the expense of productivity. And so what we've done is, through the culture of excellence, been able to embody that. We've really, and how that's managed through a number of different things, but one of them is to get yourself to a self-managed state regarding safety. It's referred to as voluntary protection program. Very few sites in the nation get that. It's referred to as STAR status. And I'm happy to tell you that we have STAR status. It has to be recertified every 3 years. We just had our recertification. And in amidst each year between your certifications, you get a level of excellence, and we got STAR of excellence every year. So the outcome of that, and I'm careful with safety statistics because sometimes people will get lost in them, and then you know how numbers and statistics are. People can do things. But when you layer our safety statistics against general industry and the hazards we face, it's 5 times safer to work at UCOR than general industry.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we're always about half our safety goals. We achieve something that we have been working towards for 5 years, which is to get to what's called a zero severity index. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean we didn't have first aid cases or injuries on the job, but their severity index was zero, meaning the people were not impeded by the injury and their ability to do their work and earn their livelihood. What's important on that is that it's very personal. I made a commitment at the very initial town halls when we transitioned the job, summer 2011, that my commitment to all of them, at that time 1,250 is that together we will ensure that you have a work environment that allows you to go home the same way you came to work each and every day.
Perfect.
And so to me, that's a material delivery of that commitment to them.
So you have a lot of key learnings that it sounds like can be transferred into all kinds of other industrial settings. Is there an effort in any way to take what you have done so well and package it up so that other companies, other types of industries who are involved in safety situations can learn from that?
Yeah, yes there is. And so we do it through a number of different venues. One, we do it internal to the Department of Energy or the federal agency that is our client and customer. They have a continuous improvement forum, if you will, and we have been an active leader and participant in that, predominantly from three points of sharing. One, the culture of excellence, which we just talked about. Two is the point I made earlier with regard to, within our industry, figuring out a way to make shared governance work. which typically is only used in the healthcare industry, but mm-hmm. we've adapted it for ours. And then thirdly is our labor management approach. We're a very labor-centric company because that's where the work face is. Those are the people that face the hazard every day. And so we believe in partnerships. They're fundamental or core to shared governance. And one of the most significant foundational partnerships is with labor, with the unions that represent the folks that do our work. So that's been our three focuses in the agency. We've been doing similar in more commercial venues. I just got back from Chicago. I spoke at the American Society of Safety Professionals with regard to the critical role leadership plays in empowering a safe work environment and worker engagement, worker involvement. And then lastly, I've been for years now the national contractor representative in an organization that's called CPWR. It's the Center for Construction Excellence and Safety. And we share a number of these culture of excellence components mm-hmm. through that to try to spread it broader throughout industry. Like with this latest keynote I had, it, actually there was nobody from our specific industry there. It was, you know, Fiat Chrysler, it was L.L. Bean, it was Republic Services, companies of that magnitude. So
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
wonderful. So what does all this mean for the community and for the broader region, even beyond Aggridge per se, and maybe even beyond East Tennessee? What are the things that are happening there that we can look at in the future and say, because of this cleanup work, because of the excellent job that UCOR did, this, our community now looks like this?
I think it's three things that, and it fits back directly to our mission in these end states.
Right.
So first of all, you know, our region, our state, Eastern Tennessee, you know, Roan, Anderson County, the city of Oak Ridge are going to be able to look and go, we have one of three sites that make up the 409th National Park of our country.
Yes.
And people are going to come from the Smokies with their passport.
Yes.
And they're going to be excited about getting it stamped here, and we're going to have junior rangers, and we're going to have, and that's all started. We're going to have all that. The next is we're going to have large-scale brownfield redevelopment on a scale comparable to Volkswagen. You know, I think communities are quite aware of this. There's a pursuit for the establishment of in the last decade, one of the first regional general aviation airports,
yes, yes.
right?
Uh-huh.
There's going to be the siting of a medical radioisotope firm as one of the brownfield sites.
How exciting.
Right. We have the whole carbon fiber initiative that's going on and all that's associated to that. I mean, it's little known, but there's a number of private sector businesses that are already there as part of the reindustrialization, approximately 200 people employed by them right now. And so we're going to have this large private sector industrial park referred to as Heritage Center that's going to be hosting all of those things, contributing to the nation. You know, I mean, it'll be the only medical production isotope firm in North America.
When will that be?
I think they're pursuing licensing right now. I mean, we have conveyed the land to them. They are owner of the property. I think they're working on financing, things of that nature. All the word I get back is still very encouraging.
That's wonderful.
With regard to that. And then the third piece is essentially almost a national level destination area associated to this conservation area.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the conservation area, as it's integrated with the two counties, the city, the greater regional initiatives that are being done here in Knoxville, are essentially making this area a destination for outdoor recreation and multi-use that's comparable to Boulder, Durango, Santa Fe. I mean, you can go on and on. I mean,
and
it's
as it. Somebody who is a cyclist in your spare time, I can't imagine how you have much spare time, but I know that you're an avid cyclist. So talk about that a little bit from a personal standpoint in terms of what's happening with Greenway connections and some of the natural assets that are being developed in your area.
Yeah, for me personally, there's a great synergy there, right? Because I've been in environmental stewardship most of my life. It's really been focused on the environmental cleanup and then the practical beneficial reuse. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, my personal interests
connect
very well. So I've been quite a multi-use conservation focused individual for a long time. It's varied with regard to involvement because each community that I've lived in have been a bit different, but this one has been so embracing and it's been so facilitating. So I've had the opportunity to now be part of Foothills Land Conservancy, part of Legacy Parks Foundation, part of the Clinch Valley Trail Alliance, and be part now as an individual in giving back, feeding forward with regard to growing that opportunity. And I'm the first to admit I see a lot of personal outcomes associated to it, both to my individual interests, but I can't tell you how exciting is. I have five grandkids. I have three that live in the East Coast, and one of them isn't old enough to ride a bike or do much multi-use things yet, but two of them are. And so to take them to the pump track at Baker Creek Preserve or to go on an extended hike at Haw Ridge with them. I just was looking at pictures the other day of my oldest grandson, but he was only two at the time, in the backpack with my wife and I, doing a connection hike between the UT Arboretum, Pine Ridge, and we live close to Haw Ridge. So, those kind of connections are great. And I am appreciative that we have a client or an owner, being the Department of Energy, who embraces and embodies that. So we have provisions in our contract that encourage us, enable us to be civic-minded that way. So we have built a community involvement investment plan that has four fundamental elements to it, in which one of them is conservation and civic investment in these areas. And it's just been fantastic.
And the land itself is so beautiful. It has been unused for a long, long time because of where Oak Ridge has been in the past, but absolutely gorgeous, pristine land that can be made into beautiful parks and beautiful greenways.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lot of credit to the owner, to the federal government, as the mission changes at the site, becomes more centric to the eastern part of the reservation, the remediation, like I said, of the East Tennessee Technology Park, those end states, National Park, building connectivities, interpretive walkways, all those kind of things is all flourishing. A number of the very senior Department of Energy leaders have been very vocal on this, is repurposing this, not just here at many of the site locations, DOE locations, for the beneficial reuse of the community, whether it's conservation, historic, or brownfield redevelopment.
Exciting times,
yes, no doubt.
For you, UCOR, and for the region that you're impacting so greatly.
I'm appreciative of carrying the message and being able to speak to it. I do have a lot of energy for it and some intensity and passion for it. But
which is all good.
Yeah, yeah. And I very much value the connectivity between, individuality, family, company, team, partners, community. I many times tell our team, I'll finish up with that it is a winner's problem, first of all, and second of all, you work and deliver to the side of the angels every day.
Mm-hmm.
And not only should you feel good about it, but you're on that side.
Mm-hmm.
And you have all those that I mentioned are the beneficiaries of those outcomes. And I feel a majority of our workforce, our community partners, mm-hmm. all share and feel that way.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
Thanks.
Ken, thanks so much for joining us today and for providing some interesting glimpses into one of the region's largest and most important projects. We appreciate you sharing this fascinating history and your thoughts on why your company has been so successful in leading the way. So thank you for all you're doing for future economic development in East Tennessee, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.